Welcome to Vegas Circle Podcast with Paki and Chris, and we are the show for people who are passionate about business, success, and culture, showcasing the stories of people in their city that made it happen. On today's podcast, we're going to discuss being an absentee founder, building a successful fast casual franchise with the founder of Royalty Exotic Cars in Houston, Texas Hot Chicken. We have Mr. Houston Crosta. So welcome to the circle, brother.
Thanks, guys. Welcome for having me here, man. I love doing local stuff. You know,
appreciate that.
I spend a lot of time all over the country, and you know, have my own little YouTube gig, and that brings me to all over the place. But I very rarely get to be a part of my own community. So this is something that I really wanted to do.
Yeah,
I've been following you guys for I don't know at least a year and a half now.
Appreciate that.
Yeah,
for sure.
I mean, I also want to know who my competition is, right?
Of course you do. Hey,
we're working
on it. I was waiting for you to say that. That was a setup. That was a setup for sure, man. No. So, I remember that when we first talked on the phone, one of the things I was telling you is I was so impressed with just like your mindset, right? The business mindset. And Chris and I, we always bump to kind of set to prep for it. And we wanted to just kind of jump right in. You know, you've got a different perspective on being an absentee founder. And I want you to kind of start off with kind of setting the lane for us.
Basically, like, man, I spent... Let's see. Let's talk 2015, 16.
Okay.
That's when Instagram was basically created-ish, right? Okay. I mean, it might have been around for earlier, but no one really heard about it until then. And my wife tried to get me on social media because, you know, I had all these cool cars. And I kept telling her, I said, it's fake. You know, it's not mine. Mm-hmm. I'm a rental car company, right? Like, these are tools, right? It's like kind of being a pimp and a prostitute, right? Like, those aren't my girls. They work for me, right? Like, these cars are not mine. Yeah, my name's on the title. I own them physically, but they're not my things. And I always was reluctant to show off
the
I don't want to say wealth, right? The word wealth is a very complicated term now, but like the riches, you know, quotations there. Yeah. The attitude and all that stuff. And she convinced me finally to start a YouTube channel, and we utilized it for educational purposes for our customers teach them how to operate the cars.
Okay.
And it started doing good. So I built up 40, 50, 60,000 subscribers, and I never wanted to show my face, right? Today, it's the literal exact opposite of that, right? Today, like, your Instagram profile is your webpage of the early 2000s.
Yeah.
It's your business card of the pre-2000s,
100%. Right? Yeah.
And so now you just can't believe anything you see online, right? And that's where I'm really against like this new form of everybody looking into the future, basically wanting to be a self-starter. I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to work for myself. I'm like trying to teach kids not to want that. Because it's not for everybody,
That's what we were talking about before,
and,
yeah.
I mean, I have over 400 employees, and that number changes every day, right? And it's like, how do I inspire people to be themselves, but at the same time, be realistic, right? Mm-hmm. And say, look, I'm not saying that you can't become a video game player on Twitch and make $2 million a year. Of course, dude. There's like, so, I wish I could. There's like a lot of people out there that have done that, right? But from what I had to do from 2015, you know, going through the cable guy days, like regular work days, you know, 7, 8, 9 days a week, basically, you know, and you're just working as many hours as physically possible. Basically, that like, I call it the ninth day, right? When you've worked 16 hours for 7 days straight and you don't even know what day it is anymore, right? Yeah. That's in my mind what I call the ninth day. And it's like, you can't remember where you are, right? That's the level of entrepreneurship where I came from. Mm-hmm. And the sacrifice where I sold my home, right? I'd worked to get the American dream. I sold everything to start this car rental company. When I told my wife we sold our house for a down payment on a Lamborghini, the word she almost shit herself doesn't explain it.
I can't even imagine.
And I did it before I even told her.
Oh, yeah.
And we were already together.
Wait. Back up for 1 second. You said you did it before you even...
I did it all. I didn't tell her. And, I mean, anybody that knows me and my wife, that still pretty much goes down. Right?
Yeah, that's bold.
I did all that. I didn't talk to her. And I just said I had this feeling that I needed to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I sacrificed 5 really good years of my life to get to the point now to where I do have a great, healthy following. You know, I've got more than 1 million followers on different platforms. Mm-hmm. And there's YouTube revenue. I feel like I'm the leader in the rental car world. Mm-hmm. And I did all this stuff. Right? I got to this level. And then I'm like, well, I'm not really happy, right? Now I have to go to work every day and make sure everybody else gets paid, You know, and I'm looking at my in the self in the mirror, and I'm like, cool, I've got this big 16,000 square foot house, but I can't even be here. I got to leave at 7 a.m. and come back at 7, 8 a.m. and 7, 8 p.m. and I'm sleeping here. I'm staying the night in this house. I'm not living in this house, right? And a lot of people don't understand that that's what it takes to get to the highest level. Mm-hmm. And so once I got there, I started to really understand that what I really wanted was the freedom to be with my kids, to be with my wife, to travel, and to really think and enjoy about the things that I truly loved, mm-hmm. right? Like, I love cars, right? Mm-hmm. So my motivation with buying that Lamborghini was selfish. I didn't care about the rental car company. Mm-hmm. I didn't care about my house. I wanted a damn Lamborghini, right? 2 weeks after I got the Lamborghini, I didn't want it anymore. I wanted a different car. And that continued hundreds of times until I realized that there wasn't a car out there that I couldn't get, mm-hmm. you know? And I got this car called the Koenigsegg Agera. Mm-hmm. I actually have the USA's only homologated Koenigsegg Agera. The only one.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah. It sounds nice. It sounds fancy.
It's worth like $5 million.
Jeez. Oh, wow. Right? Okay.
But there's only one. Jeez. So there isn't another car I could get that's better than my car. And I love my car. Trust me. I love all the cars that I have. But now that chase is over, it doesn't satisfy me the same way it did when I was dreaming about it. Right.
It's kind of an interesting concept because, you know, like almost it seems like to be an entrepreneur in general or any type of like when you're self-motivated like that, you really do have to have a sense of never being satisfied or else you're never going to be able to achieve the goals that you want. But it's almost to me like a double-edged sword when you're trying to strive for a goal that you really just jump into the next. Like you're making a perfect example where you have to.
So now like we talk about it and what do I want now? What material thing could I love more than this car that I have to work harder for? Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, 2019 was a pivotal year to really understand that money wasn't what was going to make me happy. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed making money and I enjoyed challenging myself, right? 2020 was the year I started to just basically say, what can I start now that's going to future-proof myself? Because we've been on like an 8-year run, 7 to 8 year run in the recession on the economy that we haven't seen a real pullback. And it's kind of typical every 10 years, but we never really know, right? So, you know, pandemic happens out of the blue. No one expects it. No one knows how to deal with it. And I just basically looked over to myself and I said, when the Democrat Party was elected, I was like, I got to start selling fried chicken. You know, like I got to start doing something. It was a joke, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like I was like in my mind, I was like, I just got to start selling the cheapest product ever.
Yeah.
Right. Because I felt like tourism was going to die, you know? And so everything I had built over the last 7 years was going to just be zeroed. Wow. Right. And so that basically hit the Houston reset button and we started Houston's Hot Chicken or Houston's Texas Hot Chicken. Right. That's crazy. And we call HHC. That's our, that's our social media handle, at HHC, right?
Okay.
And that just started an insane new set of problems. I've never worked in a kitchen before. I've never owned a restaurant. I've never served at a restaurant. I've barely shopped at a restaurant, let alone like even thought about starting a restaurant, right?
Yeah.
And that was very fun.
Yeah.
Right? And took us 8 months. To build my partner and I, Edmund Bersagian, he's actually a famous race car driver, Edmund Mondi.
Oh, okay.
So we shared
some partnership
together, and it was his idea to do the fried chicken, hot chicken stuff. And it was my idea to make it like cool and fun and like just better than everybody else, you know, like organic and high end, and just kind of like that, like the royalty experience is what we call it. At Houston's Hot Chicken, and we won the number one restaurant in Las Vegas award on Yelp after only being open for 45 days.
Dang, that's pretty crazy.
And so
that's a huge buoy.
Yeah,
it was like the coolest thing ever because I went to the other 49 places. It was like, hey guys, I'm Houston from Houston's Hot Chicken.
Just to mess with it, just to start some stuff. It was very competitive.
It was cool, and it was great. Everybody was super happy, and now we've got this big restaurant chain.
You guys got about 11 franchises now, right?
We have over 100 franchises that are committed and sold.
Oh, wow.
So today we signed 65 stores in the entire state of Michigan and Ohio. So we sold the entire region of that area. So they're committed to building those 65 stores. They've got to pay us a franchise fee up front. We have 11 corporate stores There is currently 5 of them open in our region, and the next 5 are opening within the next 3 to 6 months, depending on permits and stuff. They're all currently under construction. One we haven't started yet, and that's Blue Diamond in Arville. So that building is a new building that we're building. It's kind of cool. It's like all glass. Yeah. So that one hasn't even started building construction. But basically, we'll be at 11 corporate stores within August of 21 is when we opened.
The hot chicken, like you see it kind of being more of a like they're popping up everywhere. You know, I've seen a ton of them. You know, when you originally come up with the idea to jump into the restaurant model, like I think this is definitely to me one of the newer restaurant kind of business plans or business models that are popping up a lot more frequently. Like when you originally decided to jump in, what made you pick that? Was it strictly just because fried chicken was cheap at the time?
Edmund wanted to do hot chicken because it was an LA thing. He lived in LA.
Got it. Because I remember I didn't see any of them. There was like 50 out of nowhere. Like,
we ate at this place, Dave's. And it just made me throw up. I hated Dave's. And
Dave's. Oh, I know. I know what you're talking about.
People love Dave's.
Yeah.
But it's got a Middle Eastern spice to it. And the cumins and the paprikas and all of that. I wasn't raised in that food. And I have a very sensitive stomach. And so I wasn't really able to eat it. Okay. And so I told him, I said, dude, like, you can't put Dave's in Salt Lake City, Utah. These people won't even know what to do. You know, and it's got like this cartoon rubber chicken on the side of the building smoking weed. I'm like, how's that going to go in Montana? You know? And so I basically convinced Edmund, we can do a fried chicken restaurant, but we need to do it for the masses. Mm-hmm. So let's take the hot chicken menu. Dave's is basically just sliders. They're like a Raising Cane's competitor.
Yeah.
They just serve tenders only. Okay. And if you want them on a bun or off a bun.
Got it.
We have like a full menu where we have a salad, a loaded fry, we have a sandwich, and we have a tender. So we have 4 options, right? Okay. So wouldn't call us a full restaurant, but fine casual. I would consider Shake Shack our nearest level, not competitor, but
in that same lane.
Space, yeah. Okay. Right? And so that business model there was unique in the hot chicken space.
Makes sense.
We went through some early issues with trademark problems and stuff because there's this group called Houston's Restaurant that...
Oh, yeah. I know Houston's Restaurant. Yeah.
They've changed 30 of their 40 restaurants to Hillstone. And we originally understood that they were changing all of them to Hillstone.
Okay.
So we kept my name, Houston's Hot Chicken. Mm-hmm. And then we got some cease and desist. I filed a lawsuit. They filed a lawsuit. Then we both filed other lawsuits. And a whole bunch of mess happened for like 4 months. And after $500,000 legal bills, we're now Houston, Texas Hot Chicken.
So basically you won is what you're trying to steal.
We both lost is what happened.
Yeah.
Basically. Okay. I got to keep the name Houston. They just got to keep the apostrophe S. So
that's essentially how business works. Yeah,
for sure. That's really what happened, right? And it sucks because... It was cool when it was Houston's Hot Chicken.
Yeah.
It had this like really cool like nomenclature. But pivoting to HHC, right? Just like a KFC.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're thinking big brand stuff. And it wasn't that big of a deal. It sucks to spend that kind of money when the only people making it was the lawyers.
Yeah.
I lost that money and they lost that money. The lawyers made tons of money. So this is the reason why me and you had that conversation.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurship isn't fun. This is not cool.
Yeah,
I haven't driven my Koenigsegg in 2 months. So I don't get to do that stuff.
What you're saying that, right?
I'll ride down before you run me down.
What you're saying that, right? Because that was one of the first conversations we had, right?
Crazy. So
how do you manage your time? Because you guys are selling this many franchises. You said like 165 that you guys are committed to. How do you keep it going to be able to have the systems in place?
The few hundred employees help. Okay,
got it.
I feel like my skill set in general is building teams.
Okay.
Literally. Like, I feel like the people around us in all of the business, because I have a furniture store, I have an AV business, I have a car wash, I have a car dealership. I have 11 different actual functioning companies that aren't just LLCs on the internet.
Okay.
Right? Like, I have legitimate operations with employees and payrolls.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, HHC is the biggest one by far,
yeah.
Then, you know, royalty would be second there and stuff. And the teams you build around you are what's important, but those require years of maintenance, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got to build trust with people.
I was gonna ask
and yeah. It's not just trusting them. They have to trust you, right? Like in the word entrepreneurship is just like this like savaged word now, right? I mean, like if you go on Instagram, everybody's an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. and basically everybody tells you how to get rich, and everybody tells you the right way to do whatever you want to do. I follow this guy. I actually stopped following them, all of them. But there's this one guy, Alex Hormozi, right, who says a lot of really smart stuff. But
he's like an influencer or something, or was he? I don't know.
I'm going to be candid, mm-hmm. and I'm not really against Alex, mm-hmm. but like Alex is supposed to be the guy that sold his company for $100 million. Mm-hmm. He came on the scene out of nowhere, kind of like that guy. Who's the guy that just got arrested? He's the bad guy, you know.
I don't know who.
Help me.
Oh, out Andrew of the country.
Andrew Tate. Yeah.
Oh, Andrew Tate. Yeah,
he was kind of like Andrew Tate.
That's why he said out of the country. Yeah,
he's kind of like the bad guy, right? Like,
he's doing some crazy sense. Stuff.
Yeah. He came out of nowhere, right? Like one day it was just everybody was like Andrew Tate, and it was
Romania, something like that.
Yeah. Well, he was born in America. Andrew Tate is an American citizen. He was born in Chicago. Went to school in Chicago. Then his parents got divorced. His dad won like I think the Nobel Prize or for chess or something like that.
Oh, really?
Super smart. And Andrew Tate, I like Andrew Tate. He seems nice, right?
He seems funny.
Got some funny stuff. He's funny as hell.
Well, he seems kind of more like on the lines of my personality, right? Like I feel like I can relate to what he says. I'm that guy that'll just be candid and talk shit, no problem. Mm. I'm not derogatory, right? And I don't have an aggressive tone when I talk. So I wouldn't be like really discriminated against like he was. My point was that he came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
and so did this other guy like Alex Hormozi. And I like this guy, Alex Hormozi. Started following him. I read his book and it was like this like, it looked like a coloring book almost. And I thought when I got the book in the mail, I was like, oh, this is kind of weird. Like this is not really well produced. And he was on a couple podcasts and I followed him and talking about business this, business that. And he said some smart stuff. And his wife's really pretty. And, you know, they go on there and they do it together. And I just Googled him. And, like, nothing comes up except this thing called Gym Launch. But he sold for an undisclosed amount of money for $100 million, right? And it's, like, all this quotation marks here and there. And then you go on his website, acquisition.com. And it looks like a 12-year-old made it from, like, 1997.
And so it's like, a front, basically.
It looks completely like a front. And I feel like people are just talking on the internet now, and that's becoming their business. Mm-hmm. They're making up stories, and this guy's very intelligent, right? He is not stupid, and a lot of people would defend him, just like they would defend Andrew Tate, right? Against my debate, you know, I always want to debate him, but he keeps telling everybody he wants to be the most jacked billionaire ever. The guy doesn't own a car. He doesn't have a house. He moves from house to house to house, city to city to city, like nomad lifestyle, right? And on the outside, knowing what it takes to run a business that could have $100 million for a sale, right? Like royalty, I mean, has made in the good days, like it was making $1 million and $1.2 million a month, right? Like in gross revenue, right? Okay. That's renting cars, right? Mm-hmm. HHCs, each restaurant does like $300,000. So you get, you know, $3 million a month from 10 restaurants, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just gross revenue, right? For me to write you a check for $100 million means your gross revenue has got to be 15 to 20 times that.
We were just talking about that last night. Like, friend is selling that.
Billions. My boy just sold a company for $500 million. Bro, his revenue a day was millions.
Yeah.
Millions a day. Mm-hmm. He had a hair extension company, right? The largest hair extension company on earth.
Yeah,
right?
Your business has to be known to be able to generate.
Right? I mean, or you have software that is uncreatable anywhere else, right?
And you have a ton of patents that nobody can take away from you.
This whole thing just keeps starting and keeps going and keeps going. And these kids and these people just keep following these guys. And I just keep thinking to myself, like, I don't want to stop it. You guys do what you want to do, but
differentiate yourself?
Like, at the end of the day, I mean, reality is created from reality.
Yeah.
Reality is not fabricated, right? You can't fabricate real. Like, I can't be a hologram in this room right now telling you a story and Houston CrossFit doesn't really exist, right? I had to do something to get to this point for you guys to want to listen to me, for people to want to turn on the radio or turn on the podcast and listen, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for us to have this candid conversation. So eventually, I think when the money runs out and when all the 99-cent subscriptions per month run out, everybody's going to fall or they're going to disappear.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting you bring that up, because, you know, one thing I've been being more mindful of, and this is kind of one of our challenges, you know, our whole point of this podcast is to present value and be real.
You don't want some Ponzi
scheme dudes on here, right? No. Yeah, like we were talking about earlier, the Madoff.
And I think it's getting harder and harder, because, like, you know, somebody made a comment the other day, like, when I post valuable business advice on TikTok, I get 100 followers. I go on there and I, you know, scream and holler and shout and argue, I get 1,000 views or in a few minutes. And, you know, at what point do you feel like, you know, it's going to be real, like, to be successful, you're going to have to be essentially fake. Like, you have to put out a front and be...
To be really successful online, you have to be fake.
But not becomes be lying, it's becoming more and more,
You literally got to be a
character. I really think you're going to have to be fake. Because if you look at, like, the Kardashians, they built success off fake, right? Nothing in their life was ever real. Their whole life was fake. But that's what paid them. That's what people wanted to see. Because everybody dreams, right? And when people dream, then they pay. They have hope that they can get to that point.
They something to latch on
and
to.
They want
to
live that life. That's why there's a business in Town Square that you can take a picture in a fake private jet for your Instagram.
Oh, there is? They have it on there?
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Replace Banana Republic.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, that's where Pocky's on. So every time I see him have a jet on Saturday, that's where he's at.
No, but you know, to Chris's point, right? Like, that was one of the reasons why we built this, you know, built this podcast. Is, I mean, we're going on, this is our fifth season now, right? So we've been 4 years now. And, you know, we're very strategic on who we want to interview, right? Because we have a lot of people that reach out, and it's basically principles, you know, business advice. That's why, you know, we were kind of giving you the prep step, like the prep kind of questions, is kind of understanding, like, how does your mind work to be able to build all these companies, right? So just kind of backtracking a little bit, I wanted to talk a little bit about Royalty Exotic Cars. So what do you think separates yourself from all the other rental car companies? Because you guys have done extremely well, right?
Look, I'm the only one that stayed alive after two years, 3 years, four years, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years.
Just how long have you guys been in business now?
2015.
Okay.
So we're going to be on our ninth year, would be the 2024 year. So it'd be 8 years now.
Good for you.
Yeah. And I'm a car guy, right? But I created that industry. Not a lot of people remember, because you've never heard of it before. You could not ever rent a car for 4 hours before I existed. You couldn't even rent a car for, you could basically rent a car for one day, but you could never rent a car for with no deposit. You could never rent a car with just your insurance. And so I created this system where you could come in and rent a car for 4 hours. And the idea was for me to rent the car to two people in a day to go to Red Rock or Hoover Dam. I made like a destination-based system.
Okay.
So prior to me existing, there was a escorted drive or there was a 24 or 48-hour rental with a $10,000 security deposit. And you had to have major credit cards, like the big American Expresses, and, you know, they wouldn't let you have a regular credit card, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm 24, 25. I go get myself a Gallardo and a Nissan GTR. And I was like, if you got $500, man, and you got full coverage insurance, take the car. I was very naive.
But like I said, it's pretty risky. Like,
it was
extremely, extremely risky.
But like, I knew I was just a really good judge of character. Right? Like, I just didn't rent to the people who I thought were going to crash my cars.
Yeah.
You know? And then I was able to cut deals with, like, the insurance companies to let me rent from 25 to 21 to 18. Right? And that separated me in the beginning. And then, like, one day in, like, 2017, I was like, well, I had an Aventador, which was the biggest, baddest rental car ever. I was like, I'm buying a Bugatti. No one's ever done this. People say they have a Bugatti, but I'm doing it. So
don't tell me that. That's my youngest son's favorite car.
Yeah,
Bugatti.
He's smart.
Yeah,
get one of those.
Yeah, he loves it. Absolutely loves it.
So I go out and get this Bugatti, and I put it on my website for rent. I was never going to rent it. The second I flew to Miami, I bought it. The second I drove that car, I sat in that car, I knew that car was mine. Like, I was like, no, this is something too. This is way, even to today, I still go online to like buy Veyrons, and I bought in three since I bought the first one. And I'm like, oh, I'm buying this one for a rental. And I still just put it in my garage. Those cars are so cool.
Like, what is it about? See, I don't think I've ever been in like a super high-end luxury car, to be candid. Awesome. So what is it about that experience that's just different when you get inside of it?
It's like going from the circus to the freaking wind, dude.
It's a big difference. Yeah,
you feel different. You could breathe different. Really? The car smells different.
I think I'd be intimidated by it, to be honest. Yeah. I'd probably be like, I'd be nervous.
It's wild, bro. It's a wild experience. And so, anyways, when I bought the Bugatti, that was like hit the stardom. I started making YouTube videos.
Do you still have your Bugatti?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to have to come see that, Houston. I might be getting that with you.
Yeah,
so.
I don't have the first one.
Okay.
The first one is long gone now. I'm on the fourth one, and those cars are really good to own because they don't go down in value. Mm. So you can buy them, drive them, and then they sell for more eventually, right? They're always going up. It's like a stock, right?
Oh,
so
that's
like,
cool.
Yeah.
They're always going up. Anything that's like $1 million plus, it just
has a high value.
It's always going up. Yeah. So differentiating myself into the fleet was really important.
Okay.
Right. Because you're fighting guys that had Corvettes at the time. Okay. Right. And then when the cat got out of the bag and people figured out my system, which was about 4 years later, 2018, I got a couple of guys started copying me. They went around to all the nightclub guys, which was really smart. See, I don't do anything gray area. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I got way too much to go on to like remember any lies. Okay. Like I couldn't remember if I lied to my wife yesterday or not. It would be impossible. All right. But there was a guy that went around and went to the nightclub guys. And he was able to convince them to go and lease or finance cars in their name because they would all be able to get one or two. Okay. So they all collected like 10, 12 cars and kind of recreated my model.
Oh, okay. Got it.
It didn't make them very much money because there was too many splits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they were able to collect a large fleet like I had amassed and start to compete with me. Right.
Makes
and
sense.
That's when the business started to grow, like the pie.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So YouTube brought a lot of new customers in, and I always film my crashes, my crazy people, you know.
I've seen some of it. It's amazing, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
good stuff. Yeah, some of the videos are great, natural, they're live, they're
it's
real,
organic. Yeah, it's organic, organic. Yep.
Right? And some are just me buying cars and kind of day-to-day business operations, right?
Like, what is your insurance bill like, though?
It's like $60,000 a month right now. Jeez. It sucks. Insurance sucks. And insurance used to be like $15,000, but since the pandemic, because there was so much fraud during the pandemic, it just 4X.
And how often are the, like, realistically, like, do you get a lot of accidents with your vehicles? Like, I was pretty limited, really.
Yeah.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
I got one today.
What were they driving?
Today was not a rental car accident. Oh. Today was my baby, my personal car, my favorite car I've ever had in my whole life, basically. And a transport driver was bringing it from Texas to Vegas for me. I have a 2021 S-Class, but I put, like, $250,000 of like extra shit. It had Hermes orange interior. It had this wicked sound system. Had 1,000 horsepower. It was unbelievable. And it was a car I drove every day. And I had it retuned in Texas. And the transport driver blew a red light, T-boned someone, flipped over. My car flew out the trailer and just totaled. So. Christ. Yeah.
Did does that go on their insurance at least?
But that'll be definitely a 2-3 million view video. In my space, that's a lot of views.
Yeah.
Car space, once you get into 1 million to 3 million, that's a lot of views. My biggest video was like 12 million.
Oh, man.
I got arrested in my Bugatti. That was a pretty good one.
I'm about to go back and play that while we're doing this interview. That's hilarious. I didn't know you got arrested. That's or were you speeding, I'm assuming, or what?
No, I hurt a cop's ego. We were merging back when the 15, in 2017, 18, when the 15 was all going to two lanes from the Sahara area before they had built all that stuff over there.
Yeah, okay.
We were merging. I was far left, and there was an NHP officer, and I go to get over to the right, and he basically just sped up and didn't let me over. Rolled his window down and was like, just because I have your blinker doesn't mean I have to let you over. There was some profanity exchanged. He pulled back. I got over because the lane had ended. He lit me up. And we're all going like 5 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So I just stopped in the middle of the freeway. He got all guns drawn. He was screaming at me, "You want to go to jail today?"
And you got this all filmed?
Oh, it's all online.
Oh, that's
so
hilarious.
I got a little like upset and I hit the gas. You know, it's 100 degrees outside. It's the middle of the summer, basically. My tires did like a little burnout. This dude does like a professional soccer player body roll back to his car and hits me for a assault with a deadly weapon on a peace officer.
Oh, man. I'm laughing, but that's not funny.
That's real. I was trying not to laugh, but it's funny.
It's funny now.
Yeah.
At the time, it sucked, and all the stuff got dismissed.
Oh, man.
But it was funny now.
That's crazy. That's something wild to deal with. Well, I'm sure the moment it was intimidating or nerve wracking. Yeah. At least I would have been. That's intense.
It was very upsetting because like it was so dumb.
Yeah.
Right? Like it was such an easily preventable thing. Yeah. Like it was so stupid. We were just arguing, like, and he could have just got me out of the car and shit, he could have beat me up on the side of the road and just let me go. Like if he really wanted to, like the whole arrest and days in jail and getting the attorneys and the aftermath of that process, because I have regulated business licenses. Now my liquor license, every time I got to fill it out, like it follows you for 10 years. Wow. So yeah, that was
unfortunate for sure.
Yeah.
Makes you rethink back it, rethink back on it. And
I've never, so since it has helped me. That situation. 12 million
views is not a terrible thing to deal with.
No, it was great. We made millions from that video. For sure. Millions of dollars in revenue. Millions.
So jokes on him.
Because the side of my Bugatti said Royalty Exotic Cars. And I'm sitting there like, I got the best picture. It was my Instagram profile picture for like 2 years. Just me getting arrested in the side of my Bugatti. It was hilarious.
For you, restaurant industry is one of the toughest industries, right?
It is.
What do you think is that explosion? Because you guys just started during the pandemic.
I'm a marketing company, man.
Okay.
That's what it is now.
I was going to ask you, how do you
today,
market?
Today, every company is a marketing company. You want to be successful, you're marketing your product.
Okay.
You're not selling it anymore. You're marketing it.
Do you think it was really important to like get the franchise model set up initially so you can really just start blowing all of those additional...
The franchise model, my personal opinion, was a bad idea.
Really?
That's where all of our pain is. All of our pain is there. Sure, it brings us plenty of money. It's great. Money's great. But the pain is in the franchising, right? The pain is in the standard way of thinking, right? Like that's the tough part. That's why I don't want people to be entrepreneurs anymore, because it's not the same as it used to be. It's not like roses and just
it's stressful
beauty. The regulatory disaster. Our only franchise that we had for a while. We have more now. But the first one is in California. He doesn't make money. I don't want to say loses money, but our stores are netting 30%, 28%. We're getting $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 checks every month, putting it into corporate. We're investing it. It's amazing. This dude makes like $6,000 a month. And he's complaining to me because our numbers are bad. And I'm like, well, dude, you're in California. You've got this tax. You've got this person. You've got this, and this. His cost is 20% higher than mine.
Oh, wow.
And I have to deal with that. And I have to hire people to deal with him. And I like him. He's a really nice guy. But like, it's not my fault that you didn't look into every single little detail, right? You can't look at what I do and recreate it, right? Because the guys in Utah, my franchise in Utah, they technically do better than us, right? Their numbers are lower than Nevada. They have tip compliance, right? Which basically says that if you give Pocky $10 an hour, but I tipped him $5, you now are only responsible him to pay him $5 an hour.
Oh, wow.
So you get to take $5 off his paycheck for an hour because I tipped him $5.
I didn't know you do that.
Utah's not that far away. So they can you can tip all the way down to $2.17 an hour.
Wow.
So for my business, we average Well, it's tough because we split the tips. We split the tips with everybody in the restaurant, but everybody's making $6 an hour extra, right? But if it was just front of the house staff like they do in Utah, right, that would basically get them $10 an hour in tips. So we'd only have to pay them on payroll $2 an hour.
Isn't the same, like, because I know you just said you open up a lot in Michigan or franchise in Michigan. It's the same thing. I think they have to pay like $2.50 an hour.
The plus guys in Michigan, they had the highest performing Five Guys. Those are they sold their Five Guys to buy our stuff. Highest performing Five Guys in the country was in Michigan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Chris Rizzi from Michigan.
Yeah, that's from
I've never been to Michigan. I don't know anything about Michigan.
Anything. It's not great.
When we first talked about the Michigan deal, it came across my desk. I was like, I don't care. Do whatever you want. I have a guy that does franchises. I was like, make the deal, man. I don't care. You know, I didn't take two looks at it. And then I met the guys and he came out and we talked a little bit, talking about his numbers. He had sold his Five Guys. He had 35 stores, sold them for close to $100 million. Jeez.
Wow.
And I was thinking to myself, like, what? Wait, are you serious? Shit, I want a franchise in Michigan myself. You know, like, I had no idea.
Crazy. Yeah.
And in those areas, Midwest, right? Which, I mean, Utah's not the Midwest, but like, when you go cross over Utah, New Mexico, and you go to Colorado, you go to all those places, you know, they have totally different rules that we do.
They do, yeah.
And it's much better to do business there.
Yeah.
Where it's much worse. I've said no to 50 plus people in New York City. because I don't want to deal with the stress.
Yeah, because I feel like it's a lot. One thing about Michigan too is like a lot less competition, I think, for other business models, and the franchises just aren't there. And I think it's so spread out and so open. There's so many people. Like, you have a lot more opportunity to develop and grow business in those areas.
If I remember right, there's like less. There's like about 8 to 10 million people in the state of Michigan, something around there. It was like eight. It was like it was a really weird number that I was surprised by.
So maybe in Detroit Metro.
The whole state.
The whole state. Really?
The whole state was like less than.
Oh wow!
Someone look it up, but I swear it was like.
Look that up. I didn't know that. Yeah,
if it's 8 to 10. Well, yeah. I grew up in the Detroit Metro area, so there's like probably the whole, just like Nevada.
Yeah, it's
like
got a, the whole little, heart no of number, Vegas.
But it's all in Vegas.
Yeah, our first store is going to be in Ann Arbor.
Ann Arbor's great.
Next to the college.
Yeah.
So we have a store in Tempe, Arizona, next to ASU. It's on the ASU campus.
Oh, that's a good model. Yeah, be right next.
Dude, it cranks.
Are you, you must do a lot of the research before you guys are picking the area.
I do all corporate store selection.
Okay.
There's a board of directors now for the company. Okay. We grew so fast, I had to sell off a bunch of equity, right? So I had to do a bunch of exchanges and get a board and all these people, and it just flew out of the handles, right? Mm-hmm. Which is good. It's cool, you know? Yeah. But so I did a lot of early sacrificing, but I still do all of the site selection. I do all of the design for the inside of the restaurants, signage designs, and whatever you want to call it.
That's what's up, man.
So
yeah, we're gonna pick your brain offline too, man. Sure. Some of this setup. So backing up a little bit, we wanted to kind of get into business advice, right? So you always are saying not everybody's an entrepreneur, and you don't recommend it. What would you say to our listeners as business advice if they wanted to build their own business or be a small business?
Side hustles are not businesses.
Okay,
I'm a super fan of side hustles. Mm-hmm. You know. Tony, my right-hand guy at Royalty, he does like little shoe flipping on the side.
Okay.
Right? Tony makes well into the six figures. He gets plenty of bonuses. Mm-hmm. He gets to drive supercars. He's got a great job. If Tony wanted to go out right now and try to compete with me, it would be, I wouldn't say the word impossible.
Okay.
Right? But if he wanted to start his own rental car company because that was his dream, he would sacrifice everything that he has right now, right, to chase the same type of lifestyle he currently has, right? To just hit the reset button, right?
Yeah.
Tony didn't take but 6 to 8 months to get to that path where he proved that he was an amazing asset to our team and became very valuable, right? And his perks just leveled up and leveled up and leveled up, right? Yes, he has to listen to me, but I give Tony such a level of respect. Mm-hmm. I consider him my friend, and most of the times my partner, right? He may not be my partner on paper, but that was like eye-opening for me, is to have someone that works for me, quotation marks, right? But is there for me, treats the business like it's their own, right? And I recommend that type of lifestyle because he wants to make a little extra money. He buys some shoes for $500, sells them for $800-$900, right? Can pay for his week's worth of dinner. You know, Tony could drive a $100,000 car if he wanted to with his little side hustle, and it doesn't have regulatory issues, right? You're not filing 11 tax returns, and you know, you're not doing like accounting and CPA, and you're not taking off your bottom line. You don't have overhead and storage, and you know, look at your podcast, dude. Like, you could do this out of your garage, or you could have this beautiful office, right? This costs you money, right? All this equipment costs you money. Right, I don't think it makes you very much money, right? But it's expensive. Mm-hmm. But in 10 years or 8 years, however long this is going to take you to get to this pinnacle point to where you're like, okay, yeah, now I can shoot a podcast about women's underwear and we make $5,000, right? It just the money just roll in because you've got that customer base that wants to hear everything you have to say.
Yeah,
you know,
it's building the brand.
It's building the brand
for sure,
right? Yeah. And so, building a brand is very difficult today in 2023 because the world, it's kind of like walking down Las Vegas Boulevard. How do you choose who to advertise to?
Yeah.
Right? Like if we both walked down Las Vegas Boulevard, we would see different things, right? You might see an ad for daiquiris.
Yeah.
You might see an ad for water. And I might see someone laying on the street throwing up, right? And it's all flashing lights in front of us. Mm-hmm. That's how the business world is. Right, there's no clear direction which way to go. So you follow your passions, you do what makes you happy. But when you turn business or passion into business, that business becomes a headache because it's not your passion anymore.
Yeah.
It's your problem.
You say that a couple years back. We were talking about that before, but it's interesting that you say build a side hustle. I don't think we've had anybody on the show that said that at all. You know, so that's different perspective for sure.
Pay your bills, yeah. Right? That's everybody's stress, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pay your bills. I tell everybody who lives in California, move to Las Vegas. They say, why? I said, because every weekend you can go to Hawaii with the money you save.
Literally,
every weekend.
Well, that's why we're doing
literally the real estate market. Literally fly to Hawaii tomorrow morning.
Yeah, keep them out of California. Our real estate is getting too high.
It's just, come on, man. Yeah. I mean, we used to pay $1,200 for a beautiful two-bedroom. Now it's like $2,900.
Literally,
it's going to stay. That's getting the crazy. New norm.
And that's the new norm.
Yeah.
Right? So now it's moved to maybe St. George.
Yeah.
Right? We're moving a little bit west, 90 miles, you know? So
what a prump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe they put a major airport there first.
Make it much easier.
Yeah. I mean, Vegas used to be a place for you to be somebody and kind of enjoy your life and be able to take that same $75,000, $80,000 that was a standard good salary and make it last. I mean, you could make it look like you made $300 or $400 in San Francisco.
Yeah. It's a different perspective. But you're right. Vegas is definitely easier to live still.
It's fast money.
100%.
Right?
Fast money.
The dinner tonight that I had was $958. I left a $350 tip. That guy that just got that $358 tip, he's going to tip out his bussers. He's going to tip out his the couple people that helped him. Right? He's going to keep probably 60% of that, depending on how well he does his own calculations. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's going to be just a little over $200 for him for one table.
Yeah.
Right? That might pay his bills. That might pay his rent for the day. Right? And then any money he has over, he's going to go right out tonight and go spend it on dinner and tip the next waitress and the next waitress.
Yeah.
And it keeps flowing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? They don't have that in Michigan.
No.
They don't have that in Salt Lake City, Utah. That's why Vegas is special, because 100%. There's a circle of money consistently revolving through our own population.
That's true. Right?
Yeah. And that's what makes it easy to live here.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes it fun to live here.
Mm-hmm. As far as if you're a hard worker in Vegas, it's so much easier to get by than being a hard worker in Michigan is almost impossible. Like you're barely making
ends meet. Well, because you have to be a trade worker in a place like that.
Exactly, yeah.
Right? You can't be a nobody. Here, you could be a valet guy and make $300 a year, right? In Michigan, you have to be an electrician, right? You got to be
or work
someone.
On a factory line or something like that
to make
a
decent income. Skilled.
And the good thing about that is we're only getting better. I mean, you see what's happening, Super Bowl. And I mean, I was just reading this article. It's amazing all the stuff that's happening. The F1, which you're probably going to, is all the stuff that's happening. Speaking of restaurants, I'm curious, what is your favorite restaurant in Vegas? That's everything we ask everybody.
Oh, I love a lot of them. I'm a big fan of, I know the people behind some of the restaurants.
Okay.
Give us a gym.
I always recommend
the Bizarre Meats for steak because it's so cool.
I've wanted to go there.
It's just so cool. Like
with Jose, he's Andres, really good.
Michelin star, all that stuff. You know, if you want to go to like somewhere super vibey, right? That's a great restaurant because they've got the wood burning grill right in the middle of the restaurant.
Yeah.
It's at the wrong hotel, but you know,
it sounds super nice. I hear it's great things about all the time.
Good food.
Super awesome.
Yeah. Right? They have a tasting menu to some point.
There isn't a very good Mexican restaurant. I like Javier's.
Javier's
is a standard. Yeah. Javier's is basically going to become the Chili's of Mexican food one day because people are going to get the fact that it's not just about ambiance. We got to throw the food in there, right?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of Vegas restaurants that I've tried. I think Toca Madera kind of failed. I'm not really a fan of that place. The vibe is well-oriented.
That's what it is, the vibe. The food is okay, but the vibe is on point.
Yeah.
They did a good job.
Like the Dim Thai Fung place at Aria. They took over like the largest restaurant I've ever seen in my life. A million seats in that restaurant, and it's just jam packed.
Yeah,
because it's like, but it's good food. I mean, it's all like the
what thing kept me cracking up. Oh, you said the
Dim Thai Fung. What are those things called?
Oh, those dumplings. Those one I always see the
dumplings
the advertisements for.
Yeah.
It's real funny. You said Bizarre Meats. If you know Amanda from Golden Steer, they own a Golden Steer. It was funny. That was her favorite restaurant. I'm like, how are you shouting out another steakhouse? But the steak community
is
so
different, right?
That's what it is. Yeah, it's
like,
different. Yeah.
It's like me talking about a chicken sandwich and saying that, you know, you can go to, there really isn't a chicken. Steak is a different level of chicken sandwiches.
For sure.
But, you know, you go to a place and they can put gold on it. They can make it all fancy and caviar
like
and everything.
Bay. Yeah.
I used to love going to Mayfair because Mayfair Supper Club, that was a really cool gem, but their food just, they got a new chef and he sucks.
You know, that's good to know because I've been thinking about trying to go there for a minute.
Yeah.
Go to Delilah.
I like Delilah.
Delilah's
very good.
There's not a single
spot.
All these places we're talking about, If they're open for lunch, that's where we eat lunch. Yeah. Right. Yeah. My office is where you, I mean, I'm walking distance from here. So.
Oh really?
We're doing all this for lunch. So.
Man. The last thing I'll say on that too, restaurant. We just went to a restaurant for my wife's birthday recently, Villa Azur, at Palazzo.
Oh yeah.
That's a Venetian, I'm sorry, yeah Palazzo Venetian. It's yeah. That's a vibe.
Yeah,
it's they did a hell cool. of a job there.
Kumi is kind of like my favorite sushi restaurant. Because you've been to Yellowtail?
Yes.
Is a Yellowtail restaurant. And Kumi was a Kiribak. Mm-hmm. But Katsuya, which is owned now by SBE, bought Katsuya. And then Katsuya bought Kumi. So they took the Kiribak Yellowtail and they mixed Katsuya together. And now it's one restaurant. So they got dishes from both sides. They got the tuna pizza. They got the crispy rice.
Yeah. That's a vibe.
So Mandalay Bay, it's the most underwhelming. I mean, it's very very good, but it's like undercover sushi restaurant on the strip. So
I'll definitely check that out.
I love Yellowtail, so I'm gonna check that
out. Yellowtail's good.
Yeah, they dropped the Pop Rock sushi, which really sucks at Kumi because that was a star of the show. Kumi's very good. Yellowtail's great.
I feel like I had this barbecue crunch roll or something at Yellowtail, and it was the most amazing thing I remember. I've still dreamed about it. It was like 5 years ago.
Yeah, Yellowtail's bomb. We actually went probably maybe about 4 or 5 months back.
What is your favorite restaurant?
I got too many, man. I really do.
He's a foodie. This guy is all everywhere.
You know what? I like this African spot right now. Kali Bash is really good. It's like Senegalese food. I like that. It's got very good food. The vibe is good. Yeah. Owner's on point. I literally have too many. Milano, I like the Italian spot with Laura and Laura. Cheese, we actually go to a lot. You and my wife in the
what's
corner.
What's it called?
Achiza. They just opened up a second spot. It's in Chinatown on Spring Mountain.
Oh, second floor.
Hole in the wall spot.
Yes, I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Yeah, it's very, very good food. And I probably say honestly, Soul Food Kitchen is good, man, if you like some soul food.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Keith Lee was just there.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Yeah. Very good. So,
yeah.
What else is on your horizon, man? What else are you focused on for 2023?
Well, I really do think that I want to open up a Yellowtail style sushi in Summerlin.
Okay.
I want to open up like a really fancy sushi restaurant in Summerlin. I
like that. Yeah.
I've got a very unique concept. I trademarked a thing called No Mames. It's a Spanish slang.
Okay.
It's kind of like a cuss word, but it's kind of like not. It's like it means like no fucking way in Spanish.
Okay.
And I want to infuse Korean barbecue. Okay. With tacos. So you make your own tacos in front of you. So basically everyone's got their own grill.
That's pretty cool.
So I want to do these experience-based restaurants.
I feel like that's for me, those are my favorite. Like Korean barbecue, going to a place where I actually can be involved in the dinner. Yeah. Like I like that instead of just sitting there. Because it's like, especially when I'm with the kids or whatever, you need to have something to do.
Yeah. I kind of like...
Makes it fun for them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've got this idea to fuse Benihana's with Javier's. Right,
that's a good vibe because Javier's got very good vibe. Like Benihana's is,
I would say, like more of like a Tulum style, but give me the Benihana's Teppan chef and let him make me some real quality Mexican food in front of you, but on a very upper scale, the skirt steaks, you know, the wagyus, stuff like that, but infuse it with tortillas and refried beans and that, you know, Mexican rice, not the upper echelon where they're doing cilantro rices and black beans, where it's too, like, I want it to be like Roberto's at Benihana, right?
No, I like it because we need just more restaurants like that, not off like the strip.
It's kind of like some fusions that I want to do, but in general, I just want to enjoy it, bro. I just want to chill, man. I'm going to Europe for May. I want to go and open up some restaurants out there, partner with some people. You know, my goal is to kind of like live 50% of my time in Europe.
What part?
I think Switzerland is going to be the spot because it's right outside. My family's from Rome.
Got a close friend in Switzerland. Yeah. It's good stuff. Yeah.
My family's from Rome. Italy's cool. Okay. But Italy's like too touristy and like, you know, Switzerland's beautiful. But it's very it's exotic, but it's also very luxurious.
It's very business friendly too.
It is, yeah, of course. Yeah, no, it's super dope.
Yeah.
But Switzerland's close, like the train system. You can get up to Paris if you want. You can get over to Monaco. You can get down to Tuscany, Milan, all those great places. And the houses in Switzerland are like not insane, but they're also not like cheap and pieces of junk. Right? Like if you want a house in Lake Como, Italy, which is, you know, the lake that's pretty close to Switzerland and everything.
Yeah.
It's like 40 mil. I mean,
jeez.
You said 40?
Yeah, mil? Easy. Easy. If not more. mean, that's like where George Clooney lives. You know? That's some crazy like billionaire style. But it's beautiful, but you're like on a lake and there's like nothing to do there except the lake. And so like I want to be like in the middle of something because Switzerland is an hour and a half, 2 hours train to London. So you can get around.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of outdoor stuff to do there too, which seems fantastic. I like a lot of cities there have small town feels inside of them too, or like their
food is good too.
Yeah, the food is fantastic. Important to me.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, you speak my language because that's what I love. The food and just vibing is great. I'm hoping you really do that in downtown Summerlin.
Yeah.
I live in that area, and I like the idea of not having to go to the strip and being
able to about taking that old Mimi's Cafe on Charleston and Fort Apache.
Okay.
But I don't know. It's a lot of – like those restaurants, they take like $3 to $5 million up front.
Okay.
And then you're talking about, you know, an 8-9 month build process. Mm. And then another million in marketing, you know, because it's an older crowd, it's Summerlin, it's just a lot of stuff. So it's maybe not something that I really just want to just tackle on today because I want to finish up. Houston Tot Chicken and HHC, like all this stuff is so close to like being like self-sufficient, you know, without me and without everybody. So once that happens.
Your absentee founder.
Yeah, that's my mantra.
Basically.
Yeah. Absentee founder is my mantra, you know, like that's what I want to be. That's what everybody should be. So that's
awesome,
that's kind of my little plans, but you know, you never know, dude.
Yeah.
I might just wake up in the Cayman Islands, man, and just start a Ponzi scheme or some shit.
He said with the Madoff. Shout out to Bernie Madoff and Netflix.
It's totally possible.
Yeah, you ain't lying, man. Man, but we appreciate hanging out with you, man, and being able to just understand how your mind works. Everything you're doing, man, we support it, man. So it's good stuff, man. What's your social handles and how people can reach out to you?
My name, Houston Crosta.
There we go.
At Houston Crosta.
Awesome.
At HHC. Which is the Houston Texas Hot Chicken. I'm trying to get used to saying it like that.
HAC. I like it's easy to say HAC.
Yeah. And then Royalty Exotic Cars is the other one.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
But well, pay attention to this guy. He'll be taking care of taking over the world, man, moving around. So,
I'm going to need a lot of people to help.
Yeah.
So anybody out there thinking about starting a business, maybe come see me first. You know, I'll give you a reality check and show you the greener path on my side.
Do your side hustle. No, we appreciate you, Houston, man. Good stuff, man.
Fantastic.
Good stuff. Thank you, man. Appreciate that.